Aegon IV legitimized all his bastards on his deathbed. And how much pain, grief, war, and murder grew from that? I know you trust Jon, but can you trust his sons? Or their sons? The Blackfyre Pretenders troubled the Targaryens for 5 generations until Barristan the Bold slew the last of them on the Stepstones.
Now, as King Robb was writing his will, Catelyn tried to impress upon him the dire consequences of legitimizing bastards. Blackfyre rebellions were the best possible choice for her example, as they represent the worst-case scenario. So, hello and welcome to another episode of History of Westeros Podcast, a podcast dedicated to George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire book series, as well as HBO's Game of Thrones. Yes, HBO's Game of Thrones. This is episode 1, Seeds of the Blackfyre Rebellion. This is the first of many episodes leading up to the Battle of Redgrass Field, the final battle of the first Blackfyre Rebellion. This episode is spoiler-free, except for The World of Ice and Fire, and some very, very mild Dunkin' Egg spoilers. They're so mild that they're really barely worth mentioning.
Yeah, just some of the historical backdrop that is featured in those stories, nothing actually related to the stories themselves. So you won't be spoiled on the plots of those at all. Before we get started, we have a few announcements and things to go through. We'll try to make it quick. Of course, as usual, we have people behind the scenes that are giving us a little bit of help, helping us with either research or certain topics, or just giving us their opinion on certain theories, things like that, that help us, kind of put it all together and make sure, like we do, to take the whole picture of things. So, a big shout out to helper Rhaenys Targaryen from the Westeros.org boards, who is the probably leading expert on the planet as far as A Song of Ice and Fire timelines. And she also does some of her own writings on the boards as well, so you can check that out. Check her out. She's got some good stuff.
If you've looked at the wiki, she's helped you out before.
That's true. Yeah, if you've ever read the wiki of Ice and Fire at all, you are familiar with her work. So there you go. Now, as far as people who have helped financially, of course, we have to give those people their just their due. And
sound like
I'm supposed to say just desserts. You bad people giving us money. So, first of all, a shout-out to our new Hand of the King, an official title from our Patreon subscribers. That is Cash Craig.
Cash.
You'll be hearing his name. Yeah, Cash Craig. You'll be hearing his name a lot because one of the benefits of being Hand of the King is getting your name mentioned every episode. So that's that. Thanks a lot, Cash. He's one of our biggest supporters and a great guy. We talk all the time. So he's certainly a few of the thoughts that have made it in our episodes in the past. At least a couple of those are hit to his credit. Also, James Saunders from the UK. Thanks very much, James, for your support. You've been one of our biggest supporters, and we wanted to thank you for that. Also, Stephen Lewis. Thanks, Stephen, for the support. And Jordan Glover. Thank you as well. If we missed anybody that we owed a shout out, please let us know. We've changed a few things around lately, and some things may have gotten lost in the shuffle. We no longer do automatic shout outs. If you missed that announcement, if you ask for one, you'll get one. Provided you give a donation, of course, but we don't do that by default anymore. So, onward.
We did have one thing that people have been asking us. They don't know our names.
That's right. Some people, we used to say that regularly, but we don't anymore. We kind of just assumed everybody knows who we are, but we're constantly getting new subscribers. It's important for us to kind of remind people who we are. I'm Aziz.
And I'm Ashaya. If you watch us on YouTube, you'll notice that our name is AA Podcast. That's why it's AA Podcast. YouTube wouldn't let us have our title be History of Westeros, oddly.
Yeah, so, for some reason. So
that's the story. We're not Azor Ahai Podcast.
So anyway, on to the episode. We're really excited to do the Blackfyre Rebellions. As Ashaya said, there's going to be several, probably 6, 7, or 8 episodes for the Blackfyre. And that's just the first part here. It's a great topic. It's one of the biggest historical topics, one of the most important topics. So let's stop talking about it and get into it. In my opinion, in our opinion, in a lot of your opinions, you'd probably share this opinion, that George R. R. Martin crafts characters thoroughly and beautifully. The relationships, they make sense. The laws of human nature are followed. This makes it more compelling. It feels more realistic. And it's so prevalent in his writing that it applies not just to A Song of Ice and Fire, but to the backstory, to the history. The Blackfyre epic feels like several stories written between the lines, and well, that's because there are several stories written between the lines.
And there are some others that are just spelled out and meant to be taken at face value.
Absolutely. A great combination of both. This episode and its companions will seek to highlight these hidden stories, as we always do at History of Westeros. And one of the main ways we'll seek to understand the Blackfyre Rebellions is by examining the lives of those who made it happen, as well as the major events that they caused.
Mm-hmm. By looking through the eyes of the main characters, we'll reveal the events that shaped these key individuals. Why did Daemon Blackfyre rebel? Why was Bittersteel so bitter? And in particular today, why was Aegon IV called the Unworthy?
You'll see that there are quite a few reasons he earned that nickname. Now, but because we're dealing with people whose whims could cause war, whose blood makes them traitors, whose legacy would threaten stability for generations, well, it makes sense to look at why they behave the way they do.
Simply put, it's the history of the characters who made history.
Yeah. This is a worthwhile endeavor only because George R. R. Martin has made it so. With most authors, the more you dig, the more holes you find, the less it fits and the less it makes sense. The mysteries become smoke. The shiny surfaces become mirrors. This undermines enjoyment. So why even do it? Why look behind the curtains if it's going to break the spell?
Because we want to. Because it's fun, damn it. I mean, to you and me, to all the listeners out there, we're curious. And with George, the more we dig, the better it seems to get. The more it seems to make sense, really.
Yeah, instead of curiosity killing the cat, curiosity resurrects the cat by the dozen and sends him forth to do its bidding, then creates a religion based on this zombie cat cult.
Zombie cat?
Oh, there we go. It all fits. But this cat, or this king, who fathered so many important bastards, was, by extension, also the father of the Blackfyre Rebellions. What better place to begin? We've divided his life into five parts, one for each king he lived under, including himself. His own weight, you could maybe make him describe that he lived under himself. That didn't work. Each Targaryen king had a unique and crucial impact on Aegon, on the realm, on Dorne, and in setting up our main topic, the Blackfyre Rebellions. When he became king in 172 AC upon the death of his father Viserys II, Aegon IV used the power of the throne above all else to satisfy his desires. He wasn't exactly the most ambitious, although he was very ambitious about, you know, women and drinking and eating.
And getting the throne itself.
Yeah, that's true. And in actually getting the throne was maybe perhaps the one thing he was truly ambitious about. In affairs of state, he was absent at best.
Archmaester Caith wrote, "No king before or after would practice so much willful misrule."
So it actually sounds more like things were better when he wasn't trying to rule. His attention was more destructive than his carelessness, you could say. And put another way, the times he wasn't involved with his mistresses may have been worse than the times he was.
If we were to rank the Targaryen kings by who the absolute worst were, one of the first we think of course, is the Mad King. Maegor the Cruel would probably come to mind, too. But Aegon IV was arguably the worst of them all. Who do you think the worst is, Aziz?
I think it's a close call. I think I'm, maybe just because I've spent so much time thinking about Aegon IV recently, it kind of highlights him. But I can see the argument for maybe Aerys, or yeah. I don't really think there's another guy that...
Yeah, I think it's Aerys, because I think that he's the only one of them that you know, caused the downfall of the Targaryens, whether, you know, how much he was truly the downfall. And I do think that was overall bad for the realm, at least at the moment. So I think he's the worst.
Yeah, that's a good point. The whole idea that, especially if you're a Targaryen fan, then the guy who, you know, blew it for the Targaryens, that's yeah, a pretty big deal. As far as creating the most war and death, it's a toss-up. I'm not really sure who you could...
That's, yeah,
they both caused so much, it's hard to say who was worse. So anyway, feel free to let us know who you think was worse, the Mad King or Aegon IV, but wait till we've given you the full story before you make your decision. So, we'll start at the beginning of his life, because George has laid the foundation for us to understand, at least in part, why Aegon IV became Aegon the Unworthy. What kind of king could earn such a nickname? What kind of man could cause such chaos?
So this is part one, Born in Aftermath, the Reign of Aegon III. Born in 135 to Viserys Targaryen and Lyra Rogare of Lys during the tail end of the Regent Wars, which was essentially a power struggle enabled by Aegon III's youth. The Regent Wars, however, ended suddenly when the In-King came of age, of course. No more regent. And he took a firm hand. Our Aegon's father, Viserys, was eventually made Hand of the King, and he was the Hand of the King for the two after him. But this probably came later, as Viserys was only 14 at this time.
Now, a quick note, we're going to call him our Aegon quite a bit in this episode to distinguish him from all the other Aegons that come up. Of course, Aegon is a really, really common name in the Targaryen line, And we can't just call him Aegon the Fourth all the time because we're dealing with his whole life, and he wasn't king, you know, when he was born or anything. So just a little note there to help you. Hopefully you guys won't get too confused. There's also a lot of Daerons, and we mentioned Viserys several times, but there's just the one Viserys. So no need to get confused there. Now, for the most part, Aegon never seemed very likely to rule in the first place. Though the regent wars were tumultuous, the king's life, Aegon III, here's our first, you know, reason for specifying which Aegon is Aegon. Aegon III's life didn't seem to be in much danger despite the regent wars, though his first queen was probably murdered. He himself didn't seem to be in much danger. And of course, he's a, as we said, he was a very young man, so we would expect him to live many more years and probably have more children. So that would just push Aegon farther and farther back.
A year or so after our Aegon was born, his brother Aemon followed, and a six-year winter ended. Though this episode is mostly about his brother, the prince, later called the Dragon Knight, could easily have an episode of his own. And he probably will. Yeah, Aemon probably will. He's a great character.
Going through all this info, it just became him,
Now, Aemon and Aegon both became amongst the most famous of Targaryens, but they became famous in very different ways. The two would have many disagreements, some of which were so famous that they're still remembered.
Yeah, and their stories are clearly important, as George R. R. Martin brings them into the narrative at a fairly early point. The brothers are spoken of by Maester Aemon in a famous moment for Jon Snow, the scene when he discovers that the Maester is actually a Targaryen.
My grandfather named me for Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, who was his uncle, or his father, depending on which tale you believe. Aemon, he called me.
Depending on which tale you believe is the key phrase of that quote there. It's the question that all Westeros asked itself during the Blackfyre Rebellions while choosing to fight either for the Black Dragon or the Red.
Now, the quote itself is an indirect reference to the Blackfyre Rebellions, and it seems to be the first in the entire series. And Jon later speaks to Lord Commander Mormont about this, and Mormont also knows the history. And this shows us that these tales are still pretty well known. And so here we have this quote here. Maester Aemon was named for the Dragon Knight.
So he was. Some say Prince Aemon was King Garon's true father, not Aegon the Unworthy.
So this parentage question is still a topic well over 100 years later, and it's established as early as the first book.
Yeah, that great early reveal in Game of Thrones is our first mention of the two together, though Aemon is mentioned prior to the scene, and so is Nereus, their sister. George made these ancient tales part of the A Song of Ice and Fire epic almost right away, so...
Yeah, so how about that bit of subtlety? Early in the series, Jon is getting an education on a conflict that hinged on a question of parentage and bastardy.
Sneaky.
And it's a question that specifically poses the question of whether someone is a father or an uncle. I mean, that's crazy. Now, these same questions are crucial to Jon's own storyline. And this is why you just have to reread. It's really, really, really easy to miss the full significance of this because the shock of learning that the Maester is a Targaryen conceals it. It's still a powerful scene on the reread, but there won't be any shock.
True that. To be clear, one of the two major claims Daemon Blackfyre had to the Iron Throne was the rumor that King Garon II was actually the son of Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight. In a different light, that's a huge improvement, a big compliment. Son of the Dragon Knight? Hell yeah. We'd much rather be son of the Dragon Knight than son of a guy called the Unworthy, except for the whole, you know... That would mean that you're no longer the heir to the throne or whatever. So there's the matter of completely nullifying all your rights to the crown. If true, that is. And that is the big question. If true. And how can one know? Again, there's no DNA test in Westeros.
Yeah, it's not unlike Stannis' claim versus Joffrey, a bastard king pretending to be trueborn. Of course, the major difference here is that we readers know for a certainty who Joffrey, Tommen, and Myrcella's parents are. While we don't know the truth regarding Aemon, or Aegon as the father of Daeron. But in both cases, the characters in the story just don't know the truth. Other than a select few, most Westerosi don't know if Tommen is a Baratheon or an incest Lannister. So everyone is left to weigh what evidence they do or don't have, and this relies on what rumors or stories are told and who tells them.
Yeah, in the end, here's a great quote. Treason is only a word. When two princes fight for a chair where only one may sit, great lords and common men alike must choose. And when the battle's done, the victors will be hailed as loyal men and true, whilst those who were defeated will be known forevermore as rebels and traitors.
So like that sneaky, awesome Jon parallel, we also have Prince Aemon and Sir Jaime Lannister, both Kingsguard knights, suspected of having fathered the king on the queen, And in both cases, the queen is their sister.
Uh-huh.
So there we have two rich history repeats itself situations. And we're going to continue to notice similarities to other characters as we move along here. And there are a lot.
Yeah, as always, George's historical backdrop often has very strong parallels to the current story. And that's one of the things that gives so much value in examining these historical stories. Already, we've got parallels to John's parentage, John's bachelor. We've got parallels to Jaime and Cersei. And yeah, there's going to be more. The other of the two major claims was that that Daemon had to the throne was that he possessed not just the name Blackfyre, but the Targaryen Sword of Kings that bears the same name. Now, like Aemon the Dragon Knight, there's a good chance we'll do a bonus episode just dedicated to the sword Blackfyre, which is, of course, the Valyrian steel blade wielded by Aegon the Conqueror himself. Mm-hmm. So look for an episode about that, at some point in the next couple months.
But in the meantime, Aegon and Aemon's sister Nerys, the mother in these questions of parentage, and Aegon's future wife, was born 2 years later in 138. She was a delicate child who grew up to be gentle and extremely pious. She also grew up knowing her father would likely marry her to her brother Aegon. At some point, probably fairly early on, this must have given her a deep sense of foreboding. Having him to look forward to as a husband for life must have been pretty soul-crushing. It might have a lot to do with her frailties, though those could have been inborn. She was a very light eater and appeared emaciated at times, and she found physical activity very taxing.
As we'll see throughout this episode, her frailties didn't slow Aegon, her future husband, down at all. He didn't care that what he was doing to her was likely to kill her. And that's part of why he was the unworthy. Anyway, it's tempting to connect Aegon's eventual descent into lust and pleasure-seeking, which got worse pretty much with every year of his life. Connecting that to his mother's Lycene origin is maybe something that's tempting to do. The Lyseni are known for their pleasure houses, and the city was originally founded as a vacation spot for the elite of Valyrian society. Yeah, very fancy.
That is an incredibly racist thought, that he was pleasure-seeking just because he's half Lyseni?
Yeah, I'm very sorry to any Lyseni out there that I may have offended, yes. I'm not normally racist, but those Lyseni, I swear, they get me every time. But within a year or so of Nerys' birth, when Aegon was about 4, Lara, his mother, returned to Lys, leaving all 3 of her children motherless.
Yeah. We don't know why she left, but the incredibly powerful Rogare family was devastated by a series of deaths that led to massive decline within a generation. Her return to Lys may have been related to all of this turmoil. I mean, it's not easy to see your family fall from what was said to be more powerful than the Iron Bank to a minor power at best.
But it's also not easy to abandon your 3 young children. What the heck?
Yeah, right? It's really hard to fathom.
So at age 4, Aegon was surely old enough to perceive this loss. A mother, 4-year-olds typically want their mothers. So it was probably very traumatic for him, and it was our first major clue to his personality. Aemon, only a year younger at age 3, almost certainly felt the trauma as well. Nerys, she no doubt was impacted by life without having a mother. Like, who wouldn't be? But she was so young, at least she was spared the trauma of her leaving. She was only about a year old, so she probably couldn't perceive what was happening. Now, of course, that's like I said, that's still going to have a huge impact on her life, but the lack of the trauma may be something that is important when we're judging these guys for their personalities and stuff. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I can't help but think of Rickon and Catelyn when I think of little Aegon.
That's a good point. But Catelyn never came back either.
Yeah, that's true. But I also can't help but wonder if Lara tried to communicate or communicated with her children. I mean, she could have sent them letters via ship pretty easily.
Yeah, she's a powerful...
Someone could have read it to them.
Yeah, you'd think that maybe that was a possibility. But if not, if that didn't happen, it might only just deepen their sense of loss or of abandonment. So in any case, growing up without her probably contributed to Aegon and Aemon developing extreme personalities. Though they were both opposites in many ways, Aegon and Aemon, they had at least that much in common. They're both really extreme guys.
Yeah.
Aegon ate and drank and counted no day complete without a woman in his bed.
Now, while Aemon trained, prayed, and may have never had sex.
Yeah, Aegon had an absurd number of mistresses.
While Aemon joined the Kingsguard at an absurdly young age.
Aegon, perhaps in part because his mother may have showed no responsibility nor love for him, felt no responsibility nor love for anyone else. Given his self-destructive tendencies, that lack extended to his own person.
While Aemon felt the heavy weight of responsibility, perhaps heightened by his brother's constant opposite example. But his willingness to endanger himself in the name of self-sacrifice, of which we'll show many examples, shows courage and a tolerance for harm that far exceed what anyone would name typical, not just among knights, but among anyone.
Yeah. So for Nereus, the lack of a mother who would have had some ability to relate, Lara herself was married to a man not of her own choosing, which is pretty, you know, that's like par for the course for, you know, noble-born marriages, etc. But in any case, Nereus didn't have that. She didn't have a mother who understood her lot in life. And this is possibly a level, as far as Nereus being an extreme person as well, well, she was extremely pious and all that. So maybe not as extreme a personality as Aegon and Aemon with their, like, ultra, you know, ultra corrupt and ultra martial, like, noble knighthood guy. Yeah, this situation just created a lot of extreme people. I'm not a psychiatrist, of course. You can't take these things as, you know, the ramblings of someone who's got a deep understanding of the human mind, but I don't think it takes an expert to know that children abandoned by their mothers and extreme tendencies go hand in hand, or at least children abandoned by their mothers turning out kind of awkward or you know, or bad. That's just, I think everyone knows that, or at least is familiar with that concept. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that that very likely was something going on in their lives. Now, even royal children who have support systems, like, they, you know, they sound like they're not eating or they're getting education and there's people around to talk to, but still, you know, it's nothing, there's no substitute for a mother.
Mm-mm. And there's nothing quite like not having one.
Yeah.
There's no excusing the life of Aegon the Fourth, but if you want reasons, if you want to dissect this beast, then here's a negative prime motivator.
Yeah.
And not just for the children, but for their father Viserys too, who was likewise permanently affected by her departure.
Prince Viserys had the gift of charm, but he himself grew stern after his wife abandoned him and their children for her native Lys. That's a quote from The World of Ice and Fire.
Yes, and Viserys was also only 17 when this happened, so he was like this for most of his life. Even though he was the most level-headed and capable Targaryen of his era, well, maybe because he was the most level-headed of his era, he had a huge weight on his shoulders. He had a lot of crazy to make up for and a realm to manage besides.
Yeah, this is not a good recipe for well-raised children. You've got no mother, a very young father who later became Hand of the King, so he's very busy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, it bears mention that Targaryens kind of tend to be extreme in the first place.
Yeah. But, and so because of this, Aegon, Aemon, and Nereus would have mostly been raised by septas and maesters and other members of court.
Yeah, kind of being raised by the village, but by a corrupt village. Being raised at court doesn't sound like the best environment for any child, really. Mm-hmm. So these extreme personalities, though, Aegon, Aemon, and the quiet but also pivotal Nereus, and their father, the powerful and effective but joyless Viserys, their interactions are crucial to the setting. They are how the Blackfyre Rebellions got started.
Now, Aegon V is called Aegon the Unlikely, but his predecessor and our subject, Aegon IV, was perhaps just as lucky in terms of inheriting the throne. I mean, there was nothing lucky about it for the realm.
Yeah, it's great for the story, though. It's funny that I suppose you have to say that Daeron II was just as lucky then, because he's the son of Aegon. So that whole line.
Everyone was lucky. But at age 7 in 142, Aegon was likely old enough to perceive that he was second in line to the throne, behind his father and King Aegon III, who was age 22, but childless at this point. And we're told that Aegon III showed signs of staying that way.
Yeah, quote, "He likewise came to dislike being touched, even by the hand of his beautiful queen. Even after she had flowered, he was long in calling her to his bed."
Perhaps Aegon's lust for the crown developed during this time when it may have seemed very close.
Yeah.
But in 143, Aegon was bumped down a spot by his cousin. His uncle, the king's son Daeron, was born. Aegon III had learned to touch his queen after.
Yeah, that's going to get confusing again, because Aegon III, his firstborn, was Daeron. Aegon IV, our subject, his firstborn was Daeron. Both those Daerons became kings, too. So, yeah, these Targaryen names can really get confusing. So, we're doing our best to keep track of who is who, but sorry if sometimes the Daerons and Aegons get a little off track.
Yeah.
But
head
anyway.
Spinning.
Yeah. But in 144, the following year, Queen Daenerys, even, you know, similar to Daeron, gave birth to another boy, Baelor. There's going to be multiple Baelors in this story as well, so we I would say we apologize for that, but hey, it's George's fault. Aegon, so that with Baelor being born, this is Baelor the Blessed eventually. Mm-hmm. Aegon now is fourth in line mm-hmm. and falling.
Yeah, and in 145, the Targaryen baby parade continued with the birth of Daenna, future mother of Daemon Blackfyre. But it was also the year in which Aegon's mother, Lara, died at age 30. Apparently in Lys, but we don't know how. It was quite possibly as part of the ongoing fall of her house.
Yeah, so if Aegon and Aemon and Nerys had hopes of their mother returning, which seems likely, the, you know, being young children and all, mm-hmm. that those hopes were dashed. So that may have been another trauma for them all to have lived through, finding out that their mother died when they're all really young still. So now by the time Aegon was, about 10 years old, he was still behind three other princes, as we said. The king's two young sons, both younger than him, and his own father, Viserys, who was also still a young man himself. So the crown just looked remote. We're really trying to drive that point home.
Additionally, King Aegon III was only 25 or so, and Queen Daenerys had borne many children already, showing herself really no capable of more. Thus, at the time,
why stop there?
One would think Aegon more likely to fall farther behind in the line of succession than get closer. The king could easily have another son, and Aegon would be behind any of the king's grandsons if Daeron or Baelor ever had sons of their own.
Right, you wouldn't have guessed necessarily that Daeron and Baelor would have no sons, but they did. Apparently, though, despite this distance, fourth in line and falling, as we said, we're told that Aegon coveted the crown. He eventually got his wish through a chain of events that contained odd fortune, of course, and possibly murder. The king and Aegon's father, the Hand, were also troubled by several pretenders, literal and figurative. Well, both at the same time, really. These were men who claimed to be Daeron the Daring. Another Daeron. Former rider of Tessarion, the Blue Queen. That's a great name. I love that name. Obviously, that's the name of a dragon if you haven't read The Princess and the Queen.
I had Tessarion as my URL on Tumblr for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I liked the name of Tessarion. Also, it was a beautiful scene with Tessarion.
It's very sad.
It was very sad.
Anyway, he was the younger brother, this Daeron the Daring, was the younger brother of Aegon II. Another Aegon. Daeron was killed during the Dance of the Dragons. So, what's going on here? Well, people were claiming to be him. And so they were pretending to be Daeron, who was a pretender to the throne. So that's a lot of Daeron.
But what with these multiple double pretenders and the king having named his own firstborn Daeron, the father of the queen was Daeron Valerian, the Daeronosity of the court was out of control. There was much Daeron.
It's overwhelming, all the Daeron. So these rebellions were surely not huge problems by themselves, but the implication is important. Gone were the days when many rebellions that may have happened simply were called off, or the conspirators realized, we can't rebel, there's dragons. But at this point, the royal family only had small dragons and wild dragons. Nothing fit for war, nothing particularly threatening. And this is unprecedented for the Targaryen reign.
So while the realm was adapting to being dragonless, our Aegon was growing up. Like the Mad King, the Unworthy was promising at first.
Yeah, we hear this quote. He had been comely in his youth, skilled with lance and sword, a man who loved hunt and hawk and dance. He was the brightest prince at court in his generation and was admired for his wit.
But he quite obviously could not control his urges. The lust that he became notorious for ruled him as king, and unsurprisingly, it ruled him long before he took the throne as well.
Now, a lot of factors contributed to enable Aegon's gradually increasing appetites. Though he coveted the crown, he was surely aware of the growing distance between himself and the throne. He had few responsibilities, few prospects, no office, no need to work, no mother, what was likely an absent father, and all the advantages that come from being born a handsome, skilled, charming prince. So, everything he needed, but nothing good.
So he earned fame for having many mistresses and bastards, and he got started early in building that reputation. Mm-hmm. In 149, at age 14, he began an affair with Lady Felina Stokeworth. When they were caught 2 years later, she was quickly married off to the Master of Arms, Lucas Lothston, and he was granted the Castle of Harrenhal, and thus was born House Lothston.
Yeah, this was the Viserys' own master-at-arms, so it's a little odd. We're not sure if Viserys had land, or maybe he just had his own master-at-arms because his sons were young princes. It's not really clear, but it's also not terribly important, just kind of an interesting detail. But regardless, this distance that was put between him and his mistress, this would be the first example of him showing that obstacles don't really get in his way when his lust is, in the balance. The next 2 years, he simply just began visiting Lady Fellaena over at Harrenhal, and which, you know, it is not that far away. So he probably went kind of often. From
they probably should have sent her somewhere more distant.
Yeah, like the Riverlands is like, that's just so close. Yeah, she sent her to the north or Dorne or something like that. Yeah, just not just a week or two weeks ride away.
That's they couldn't have sent her to Dorne yet.
That's true.
But the north.
So by extension, as well, Lord Lucas's son Manfred, who was Lord of Harrenhal during the first Blackfyre Rebellion, could be Aegon's son. All the children of Fellaena Stokeworth, their parentage is very up in
suspect.
The air.
Yes.
We don't know. We don't even know when this Manfred was born, however. So that's a kind of a thin thread, but still very interesting if true.
Aegon was never really challenged as a youth, though important things did happen around him and major events transpired throughout the realm. They didn't really have much of anything to do with him. Adversity existed, just not for Aegon.
This is in stark contrast to his father, a man who grew up a hostage who spent his whole life working hard. One thing Aegon and his father did have in common, not the best thing to have in common, but a thing in common nonetheless, was the lack of mother. Lara, of course, left, as we covered, while Viserys' mother, Aegon's grandmother, was eaten by Sunfire the Golden during the Dance of the Dragons. Pleasant. Mm-hmm.
So the year 153 was a momentous year in Targaryen history, and for Aegon himself, who was now 18 years old. He seemed to have slowed his visits to Harrenhal, perhaps in connection to his new status as husband. Early in the year, he married his sister Nerys, a delicate girl still, and pious, more like in personality to her cousin Rhaena, or Baelor the Blessed, or their mutual brother, Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, who was said to be the only one who could make her laugh. This closeness between Aemon and Nerys no doubt contributed to the rumors of King Daron's parentage years later.
Now, it hardly needs saying that Nerys was a terrible match for the lustful, corrupt Aegon the Unworthy. Of course, at this point, he had yet to earn that nickname. He was still a promising prince at this point, so a major weakness for women was something he could probably get away with. That's not altogether uncommon, and it hadn't reached the epic levels it would reach later. Though Nerys was likely embarrassed by Aegon's, you know, dalliances, and Aemon was surely angered by it, as protective as he was. But it is said, even in current times, that Nerys wept at her bedding, and that the brothers, Aemon and Aegon, quarreled during the wedding. So there was some unpleasantness there as well.
Just after the marriage, Aemon joined the Kingsguard at the ripe old age of 17. The Dragon Knight earned his nickname in part because of the dragon on his helm. The name may have come around during this time as well. Despite the poor match, Nerys did bear Aegon a child on the last day of 153. It was a boy, and they named him Daron,
obviously.
His cousin Daron, the future young dragon, was about 10 at the time and heir to the throne.
So it's perhaps a little odd to have all those Darons, but Daron would conquer Dorne by age 16. That's the young dragon Daron, not Aegon's son. And this may have, and the young dragon convinced the great lords of the realm to accept his plan to attack Dorne when he was only 14. So what I'm getting at is that he may have been a very impressive 10-year-old, and maybe Aegon, the future unworthy, decided to name his son after this promising cousin of his. But in any case, it's pretty weird to have a second Daron in the royal family at the same time. But hey, that's the Targaryens for you. So he may have been named his... So Aegon may have named his son after the young dragon, but he may have named him after Queen Daenerys, possibly a motherly figure for him, maybe, because she was around and she was a mother to the other princes, so it's possible something like that happened. But we don't know how long she lived. But she was also only 6 years older than him, so maybe not the best motherly figure. Maybe she was too young.
Or maybe Aegon liked all of those tales of Daron the Daring, who inspired so many pretenders. It could have even been his sense of humor.
Yeah. Nerys nearly died from the pregnancy and labor, and was told by Grand Maester Alford that another baby might kill her. She supposedly said,
"I have done my duty by you and given you an heir. I beg you, let us live henceforth as brother and sister."
"That is what we are doing," he replied.
The Dragon Knight and Nerys were said to be inseparable, not only fanning the rumors of a relationship between them, but highlighting a major reason for Aemon to despise his brother. Aegon never ceased sleeping with Nerys despite the warnings from maesters and numerous brushes with death.
Numerous, yes. There would be more. This must have infuriated Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, who had to put up with seeing his brother repeatedly endanger their sister's life merely to satisfy his lust.
Now, the final final major event of 153, perhaps the most important of all, was the last Targaryen dragon dying. Surely Daemon Blackfyre would never have risen against a Targaryen king with dragons. I mean, unless he had his own, of course.
Well, that'd have been interesting. It would have had to be a black dragon, right? Now, because of this instinction, King Aegon III became known as the Dragonbane.
It wasn't for lack of trying, though. There were attempts to hatch dragons. There were no summer hall type events that we know of, but the World of Ice and Fire does use the phrase debacle and failure, so there's that.
Yeah. Aegon the Unworthy might have been witness to these attempts, and he surely heard much of them, even if he didn't know perhaps the gory details. And this despite him being busy with his next mistress, Mary Meg, whom he was with from most of 155 to 159.
Yeah, Aegon wound up having four daughters with her, all of whom his father had trained as septas. There are some pretty songs about Mary Meg, but her death was not so pretty.
No.
Or Mary.
No.
Aegon had taken her from a blacksmith, who then beat her to death when the prince ended their relationship. Now, halfway through that whole affair, in 157, King Aegon III died of tuberculosis, also known as consumption. He had ruled for 26 years, but he was only 36 years old.
Wow. And with his death, his eldest son inherited, so.
So let's move on to part two, the conquest of Dorne, reign of Daeron I.
When he first proposed to complete the conquest by bringing Dorne into the realm at last, his lords reminded him that, unlike the Conqueror and his sisters, he had no more dragons fit for war. Well, no more dragons at all, really. Mm-hmm. That quote's a little funny there. To this, Daeron famously responded, "You have a dragon. He stands before you." The guy had confidence.
Yeah. Aegon III's eldest son became King Daeron I, and he set his mind to succeeding where his ancestor, Aegon the Conqueror, had failed. He intended to conquer Dorne, and fast. He got started so quickly that it's pretty much beyond certain that he had it in mind from a younger age. Younger than 14.
At first he did indeed add Dorne to the realm, doing without dragons what his ancestors couldn't do with them. And again, at age 14. The war was over by the time he was 16, but still, started when he was 14 and he won. It's crazy. Of course, Aegon the Conqueror was 27 when he began his conquest, so this Daeron gets started early. The conquest of Dorne and the life of the young dragon is surely a topic worthy of a separate episode someday. There's us advertising yet another episode during an episode. Now, for now, it will suffice to understand its impact on the Iron Throne's relationship with Dorne. Not just the politics, but the personal relationships, the attitudes that drove the major events behind the scene, all leading to the Blackfyre Rebellions. This is a concept you are familiar with. All the same, A Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones fans know this well. Kingdoms can earn invasion over no more than a personal grudge. Wars can be fought over the love of a woman, sibling rivalry, or just the whim of a capricious ruler.
Without the Young Dragon's war with Dorne, there would not have been Baelor's grand gestures of apology and peace, which included a royal marriage. Dornish influence at court was a major cause of the Blackfyre Rebellion. It was a huge sore spot for many Westerosi who had become accustomed to Targaryen rule and or those who hate the Dornish, especially the Marcher Lords, who have considered the Dornish enemies for eons.
As it was, Daeron I took Sunspear by 158 and pacified the Rebel Lords by 159, considering the war won at that point. This would have involved running all over Dorne in the deserts, facing guerrilla tactics, thirst, no comforts, military campaigning in the desert. Yeah, that's just rough. So Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, unsurprisingly, shined above all, save perhaps the king himself. He jumped in front of a poisoned arrow aimed at Daeron, but survived. So already he's showing the devotion and extreme bravery and self-sacrifice that we alluded to earlier. To ensure the loyalty of his newly conquered subjects, the young dragon took hostages from some of the noble families. Pretty standard practice. Now Aegon, our Aegon, who we assume fought in this war because of his skills in youth, and he was around 22 at the time, was somehow allowed to be in charge of the hostages when they were brought back to King's Landing. So possibly this is evidence that Aegon was close with the young dragon. I mean, they were cousins and they were both royal princes. And if Aegon carried himself in the war well, that would certainly enamor him to Daeron, as well as the, naming his son the same name. So maybe that's why he got this job. Maybe Daeron was looked past his, his impropriety with women and gave him charge of these hostages, which included several women. So, unsurprisingly, he developed a relationship with one of these hostages. It's unclear if this particular mistress, Lady Casella Vaith, replaced Mary Meg, or if Aegon had already parted from her. And it gets a little interesting thinking this out.
We can't ignore the timing of the war and the fact that the timeline appears to show Viserys sending away Mary Meg and her daughters while Aegon was off warring with King Daeron and Dorne.
If this is true, that while Aegon was off in Dorne, his father, you know, sent his mistress off and put his daughters with that mistress in a, you know, as septas, you know, against his knowledge or not knowing that, he could have held a grudge for that. And that'll be important later on. The relationship between Aegon and his father, well, they aren't very alike, so it's pretty important.
Either way, Aegon may have made himself an early enemy in House Vaith, as Casella was set to pine for him for the rest of her life. Though this may have really mattered very little in the grand scheme of things, as all of Dorne would come to have many reasons to dislike him and his family.
Of course, they had just been conquered, after all, and that alone would sow permanent hatred for House Targaryen in some, not just among those taken hostage.
And anyway, the traditional hostage-taking strategy didn't even work, as the commoners fueled rebellion on their own, having very little care for the highborn hostages' lives at King's Landing with their independence in the balance.
And also, in a political blunder that again reminds us of the young wolf, the young dragon installed a Tyrell, Lord Lionel, as governor of Dorne.
Tyrell, in charge of Dorne. Dornishmen tend to hate Tyrells, and vice versa, so as could easily be expected, Lord Lionel did not treat his charge with care. Perhaps you all remember the tale of the Lord Tyrell who tried to summon a woman by pulling on a silk sash above his bedpost, only to have a bunch of scorpions fall on him and kill him.
Yep, stories like this would not help Dornish non-relations going forward. And I know what some of you are thinking. Dorne was defending itself and trying to regain independence. Dropping a bunch of scorpions on someone's head really is nothing compared to your whole country being conquered.
And hey, the event took place at Sandstone, seat of House Corgyle, whose sigil is 3 scorpions. It's said they used over 30 sigils worth of the deadly creatures to be sure he died.
30 sigils worth. That's a great new measurement there. But the point is that people are hypocrites. Even though the Seven Kingdoms attacked Dorne, and the Dornish pushed them off, people are still going to hate the Dornish for fighting for their independence, even though it was the Westerosi, the northern Westerosi, who provoked it all. So, despite the Dornish having, you know, a right to break free, most of Westeros is not going to see it that way, especially House Tyrell, one would think. With Lord Tyrell's death, rebellion broke out quickly, and the young dragon returned to put it down. Again and again, he showed his prowess in the field, and he forced Dorne into negotiating a surrender. But the surrender was a trap, and he was killed during the parley. Now, there's no reason to believe that Aegon was there for this parley. He was probably part of the first stage of the war, but we don't see any evidence that he was part of the second phase, the putting down the rebellion, especially because of what happened to all these people. Who was there? His brother, Aemon the Dragon Knight. Aemon was captured, and though Aegon didn't seem to get along well with Aemon, again, they didn't share much in common at all, it doesn't mean he didn't have issues with the Dornish capturing his brother. So it's hard to say, because of all those things, it's hard to say what he actually thought about his brother being taken captive.
Yeah, did he? I mean, like most families take it as a point of house pride that one of theirs is a captive of the enemy?
Well, maybe he just didn't care.
Yeah, or maybe he found some kind of perverse pleasure in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of, that's a wide open group of possibilities there. Now, Daeron's incredible record as a battle commander made him hero to characters like Jon Snow and Robb Stark, who we said there's a lot of comparisons to, and despite this ultimate failure. Perhaps he was hero to Aegon and or Aemon as well, despite being younger. This could be part of why Aegon hates the Dornish, which he definitely does. And now there's a strong parallel here as well. The young wolf, preceded long ago by the young dragon, both won glory in battle while dying still young through treachery.
Unlike Robb, Daeron had never married, and he ruled for only 4 years. And like King Robb Stark, King Daeron had no children. So his brother became King Baelor I, later known as Baelor the Blessed.
Or Baelor the Befuddled. Opinions vary greatly on this next monarch. Part 3. Lust Enough to Kill a King. Reign of Baelor I.
He was a rare spirit, pure and brave and innocent, untouched by all the evils of the world.
Is what some would say, but others would call him
the feeblest king who ever sat the Iron Throne.
Yeah, real polarizing figure, this Baelor. Though the incredibly pious Baelor the Blessed's reign is also, like a lot of these other Targaryen kings, a story unto itself. Like the young dragon, like Aegon III, the Dragonbane. We'll try not to stray too much. Remember what our focuses are here. set up for the first Blackfyre Rebellion.
Now, openly, the rebellion was about Daemon Blackfyre versus Daeron II Targaryen. It was about several big personalities, a deathbed proclamation, and opposing ideals on what a king should be. Those are the headlines, the attention-grabbing details. But it was also about Dorne, the changes in the royal family, xenophobia, an ancient enemy not just made part of the realm, but elevated above all others into the royal family. The seeds for this were planted during Baelor's reign and began to bear fruit just as he died.
So, again, the Iron Throne's relationship with Dorne is crucial to the setting, and Aegon's early years are a part of it all, despite his own impact being minimal at this stage. Take your pick of the reasons. The bottom line is Aegon hated Dorne. We know that for a fact. It's spelled out precisely in the World of Ice and Fire. It doesn't seem to be any room for doubt there. As king, the impact of this hatred would be huge, of course. And there's the matter of all those bastards of his who also had their own issues with Dorne or not. And the most important of whom will be born during Baelor's reign. And Aegon's first grandson is about to show up, too.
Mm-hmm. But first, Baelor inherited a major decision what to do about his brother King Daeron's murder. The Dragon Knight is in captivity. Most likely, both Targaryen ancestral blades are captured. Hand of the King, Viserys, is calling for the execution of the hostages.
Now, this may have further frustrated Aegon's relationship with his father, but this also seems far from certain. Aegon may have been disgusted with the Dornish himself over the murder, or simply bored of Casella on his own. So he gave her up, one way or the other. Now, we talked about how the young dragon was a hero to so many, but to the Dornish, he was probably some sort of evil military child prodigy. While the lands subject to the Iron Throne were busy comparing Daeron I to Aegon the Conqueror, I bet the Dornish had kind of the opposite view. They were probably thinking of him more like Aegon, or rather, Maegor the Cruel. All that with his youth and his aggressiveness and warlike nature. I mean, he didn't have the insanity. Maybe he did, actually, but it didn't seem to have... He certainly didn't have Maegor's level of insanity. And it's easy to forget that Daeron's invasion of Dorne broke a peace treaty that Aegon the Conqueror himself signed. This treaty pledged, quote, eternal peace. So, as stubborn and fiercely independent as the Dornish are, it seems likely enough that Daeron did a few nasty things during the war to, you know, set examples, to keep them in line. You know, you do nasty enough things, it keeps people from, you know, acting out. And the Dornish are stubborn, and that's not going to work. So it's just kind of this cycle of violence. So we saw also that Daeron didn't exactly seem to have a delicate touch for politics by putting the Tyrell in charge over the Dornish. That's one of the best examples possible. It's like the guy, like Robb Stark, didn't seem to have the greatest hold on politics. Great with the commanding, but, you know. So the persistent peace between Dorne and the Iron Throne was shattered by this completely unprovoked invasion and subsequent conquest. So thousands of lost lives. We're talking uncountable debts of vengeance. We're talking bloody revenge sworn and passed down to future generations. It's Westeros karma. So the Dornish would suspect future Targaryens of misrule akin to Daeron I. So picture this, you've got, even when Dorne was brought into the realm peaceably, you still have people that are remembering the time when the Iron Throne was briefly in charge of them. And what did they do with that? They put a Tyrell in charge. Like, all you gotta do is imagine some Dornish lords thinking, do we really want these guys in charge of us? Look how bad they handled it.
But it gets more complicated, because during the years of 161 to 171, while Aegon was maintaining his busy, travel-heavy, playboy princeling lifestyle, King Baelor was trying his best to repair the relationship with Dorne, making dramatic gestures while also attempting to create a lasting peace through marriage. And this marriage involved our Aegon's own firstborn Daeron, who became betrothed to Princess Mariah Martell of Dorne.
Mm-hmm. Aegon, of course, later would try to undo Baelor's positive results. It's kind of a back and forth. You got Daeron ruining the relationship, Baelor trying to fix it, and then later Aegon will try to ruin it again. But we still have a few years before some of those things happen. And then Daeron will fix it again, right. The next Daeron. So, yeah, it's just... And then Dorne is part of the realm, and then there's the rebellions, and then blah, blah, blah. Basically, it's never peaceful between Dorne and the Iron Throne, even when Dorne is part of the Iron Throne, as the Song of Ice and Fire tells you. But in the meantime, we're not quite there yet. So up to that point, we still have the unworthy spending large amounts of time of Baelor's reign in Braavos, sleeping with the Black Pearl. Mm-hmm. How do you say her name? Do you say Belagere, Otheris, Belagere? I don't know how to say her name. Belagere.
I don't know.
It's a cool name, even though I don't know how to say it.
I like either of them. Maybe someone knows. Maybe we should have tried to see if there's any real world name similar to it.
Yeah.
But I say Rogare, so I like Belagere a little bit. I don't know. I like that Gere.
It sounds Italian somehow.
Yeah.
And Dario.
But Aegon was sent there as an envoy, but part of King Baelor and or Prince Aemon and their father, Prince Viserys, his thinking was to get him away from Nereus.
Yeah, there may have been a bit of a pattern, actually, with the timing of Nereus' pregnancies. They seem to coincide with when he doesn't have a mistress. It's almost like Aegon gets... when he doesn't have a mistress, he's like, well, my wife is the fallback plan. And basically all the pregnancies seem to fall right around the time when he didn't have a mistress. That's a catch by Rhaenys Targaryen there. So it looks like he turned his attention back to Nereus after he lost Casella Vaith when the hostages were sent back to Dorne by King Baelor. Nereus, however.
Yeah, Nereus gave birth to some twins in 161, and she was again in danger of death due to the exertions of the labor. The twins themselves died.
So the idea was, send Aegon off to Braavos so he can't be, you know, trying to sleep with his sister who really can't handle another pregnancy at this point. So it would allow her to recover without interference.
Mm-hmm.
And Aegon, of course, as we said, is very stubborn about claiming his marriage rights, so even when his... threatened his sister's life, so.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really smart that they sent him off, as, you know, as we've seen, and as he's just said, he has a pattern of getting past these minor barriers in the pursuit of women. For example, despite all that time far away, he still managed a few stops in between at Harrenhal to visit his former, more regular mistress, Felina Stokeworth. She was born at Stokeworth, but she was now the First Lady Lothstan. And this, too, would become important later, as Felina, like several of Aegon's mistresses, all mistresses, really, was ambitious.
She was, yes. Felina had a child who had the official name of Jane Lothstan, and many believed, that Aegon was Jane's father. So she'll appear later in this episode, but first we have to give her a little time to grow up.
Be patient with baby Jane.
The Blackfyre Rebellion was never about one particular incident or problem, as the World of Ice and Fire tells us.
There was no final insult, no great wrong that led Daemon Blackfyre to turn against King Daeron.
Of the major causes of the rebellion, well, we've covered the large-scale relationship that drove events, mostly Dorne and the Iron Throne, but the personal relationships are probably of even greater importance, and in a lot of ways they're more interesting. Aegon was said to have 9 great loves in his life. Nereus, his sister wife, not one of them. They didn't get along very well, as we pointed out, and this is well known. Not only did they not get along, in other words, everybody knew they didn't get along, and of course, that probably seemed obvious to people knowing the differences in their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But much later, when king, Aegon would make use of the open secret, to fuel the rumors that he was not Daeron's father. In other words, Aemon and Nereus' time together was part of, what he used to start those rumors.
Mm-hmm. So as you can see, much that would shape matters further down the timeline was happening before Daemon Blackfyre was even born. And as to that, Daemon Blackfyre, a memorable and particularly relevant feature of King Baelor's reign was the relationship, or lack thereof, with his sister wife and their other two sisters. He shunned Daena and had her cloistered with Elaena and Rhaena in what came to be known as the Maiden Vault.
He never consummated the marriage and actually had it annulled. Jaime Lannister himself shares an opinion here.
The realm would have been better served if he had closed his eyes and fucked her. I know enough history to know that.
In an odd turn of events, Aegon's lust became part of his lucky ascent to the throne. The Maiden Vault, in quotes, air quotes, was clearly not Aegon the Unworthy proof. Another obstacle easily overmatched by his lust.
Apparently, only female nobility and servants were allowed in the place, but as Judge Oberyn Martell told the accused Tyrion Lannister,
princes are permitted to go where they will, or so I told your guards.
Aegon would not have any trouble getting past the Maiden Vault guards either, I'm thinking, even if they wore the white cloak. Or it could have been the other way around. Daena is said to have escaped the Maiden Vault at least 3 times. Maybe she found Aegon.
Yeah, maybe she looked him
up. He
was
good looking.
It's true, he was. For a time. Maybe that's why Daena was not named as one of the 9 loves of his life either. She got disgusted with him when he started to well, become disgusting. yeah, she liked Daron the first and his martial nature. Aegon, kind of the opposite, right? Regardless, though, the irony here is pretty amazing. The Maiden Vault was supposed to keep these women from causing sinful thoughts by keeping them out of sight, and to keep men from having access to them. And instead, it created Daemon Blackfyre.
To Aegon, the Maiden Vault was no barrier. It's more like, hey, here's a place where there are a lot of beautiful women who never get male attention or even company, and hey, they can't leave or keep me out. Also, I'm a charming, handsome Targaryen prince.
You sure are. He had an affair with Dana, and this maiden in the Maiden Vault developed signs of a very unmaidenly pregnancy.
Just like that, Daemon Blackfyre was conceived. Well, it wasn't more, just like that. It probably took a little time.
A couple minutes.
Yeah. Daemon gained everlasting fame. But his mother, Dana, wasn't exactly a nobody. She became known as Dana the Defiant, and she earned her nickname by refusing to tell King Baelor or anyone that Aegon was the father, though it was apparently suspected.
Yeah, the truth would come out eventually, but in the immediate short term, nobody knew who the father was, and Baelor the Blessed, always looking for an opportunity to show godliness through masochism, was inspired to a 41-day fast at the birth of Daemon Waters, before he got the name Daemon Blackfyre. Mm-hmm. And this 41-day fast killed him, shockingly. Yeah. You don't eat for 41 days and you die? Wow. Yeah. How about that?
I guess Jaime was right. If Baelor had just consummated his marriage, there never would have been a Daemon Blackfyre.
Aegon, as unworthy as he was, is not so likely to try to sleep with the actual queen. That's what we mean by saying if Baelor had consummated his marriage, it's a good chance Aegon might have been able to control himself and not try to sleep with the actual queen. Because that's not just a scandal, that's treason. It didn't stop him from accusing his honorable brother, the Dragon Knight, of that exact crime later, however, of course. Mm-hmm. We're, of course, referring to him accusing his brother of fathering Daron the Second, rather than Aegon himself. Now, around the same time, probably a few months before Daemon was born, Aegon, who was only about 36 himself at the time, saw the birth of his first grandchild, a boy who would one day play a key role in defeating Daemon Blackfyre's army. So obviously he's a big part of the story as well. He was known as Baelor, confusing, yes, and he was named for his pious great uncle who hadn't quite died yet, and was later known as Baelor Breakspear. Probably would have been a much better king than Baelor the Blessed or any of these guys, really. But
though nothing like the stir around Daemon Waters.
A little pun there, yeah.
Young Baelor's birth was controversial, too, though it was obvious that the king would have no children. So it was only a matter of time before our Aegon became king, and young Baelor would be in line to inherit the throne himself down the line.
The problem was that young Baelor Breakspear didn't look like a Targaryen. He looked Dornish, and that was a problem, especially for people who don't like Dornish people. Now they're like, are we really going to be ruled by this guy? And that's sad, because Baelor was an amazing person.
Yeah.
But most notably, the thing about Baelor that looked non-Targaryen, or did look Dornish, was his hair. He didn't have the silver gold hair of Targaryens. He had just regular dark hair.
Yeah, he looked like his mother more than his father.
Yeah, by a lot.
And this confirmed what many around the realm had feared for a while, and it instilled new fear and perhaps loathing in those who hadn't. There was now a direct line to the Iron Throne for a Dornishman, as Baelor Breakspear was seen by many.
Right, he's half Targaryen, but he looks Dornish, and that's just how people think.
And he's still
half
Dornish.
Yeah, so that's just, people would think of him as Dornish just because of how he looks, even though that's just kind of silly. But that's how it works. Yeah. We don't make the rules.
Yeah, so, it's like in real world mixed children. Some of them they look whiter, some of them look blacker, and they're seen very differently because of
true.
That.
That's very true. And it just, really, it's amazing how much in the real world just how you look can impact your life and your future. And certainly George has captured that well, that aspect of reality very well here in this part of the story. And it's going to be a rub going forward. You'll see how important this is. The whole Dornish influenced court is, so many people just really hated that. In the meantime, however, though fasting seems to be the blame for Baelor the Blessed's death, 41 days without eating seems like that would kill you.
One day without eating for
and there are whispers that he was poisoned, despite the kind of straightforward sounding manner of his death. The World of Ice and Fire mentions a specific source among several, as well as multiple possible motives for this murder.
Malicious rumors that followed in the wake of Viserys' ascension, begun, some say, by the pen of Lady Maya of House Stokeworth, suggested that Viserys poisoned the king in order to finally gain the throne after a decade and more of waiting.
Now, the name House Stokeworth in this context really jumps out, because Viserys, who was probably Hand at this point, or at the point I'm about to describe, was the one who created House Lawston from his master-at-arms and Felina Stokeworth. Stokeworth, that's Aegon's first mistress. So recall as well that Aegon continued to visit Felina even after he became married and moved on to other mistresses. So they were on good terms still, probably because Aegon was still very lustful and Felina was still very ambitious. So thinking conspiratorially, is that a real word? The rumors about King Viserys and poison, it seems, may have been spread as part of a plot of some kind, and you can see where it all came from because of the Stokeworth-Aegon connection, and we talked about how Aegon didn't like his father.
You can see it in this quote. Others have suggested that Viserys poisoned Baelor for the good of the realm, since the Septon King had come to believe that the Seven called on him to convert all the unbelievers in his realm. This would have led to a war with the North and the Iron Islands that would have caused great turmoil.
So, is this extra motivation an invention to further incriminate Viserys, or was it a legitimate possibility? I mean, a war like that, if Baelor really had declared that the North and the Iron Islands had to take the Seven, whoo!
He might have been the worst king then.
Then, yeah, that's true. That may have nominated him. So, if so, that with that in mind, it actually does make sense that someone could, you know, decide to kill him just to avoid that kind of debacle. But we, of course, can't know for sure. Now, eventually, Aegon himself would be accused of poisoning his father, Viserys, to get the throne. So we have Viserys being named as a possible poisoner of Baelor, and then Aegon possibly poisoning Viserys. Mm-hmm. But I think there might be another way to look at it. With the rumors about Viserys poisoning Baelor have some merit, Viserys was his hand for 10 years. I don't know if that fits. But Aegon himself wants to get to the throne, which we know he did. You know, maybe he just decided to kill his way to the throne, murder his own father, murder Baelor. What better way to hide his own complicity in Baelor's murder than by casting the blame on his father?
And if this is the case, it really worked. Viserys is not remembered fondly, despite being such an effective hand. This poisoning rumor seems to be a big part of why.
Yeah, we have another conversation between Tyrion and Oberyn that gives us shed some light on it. The prince laughed. Viserys hardly reigned a fortnight.
He reigned more than a year, said Tyrion.
Oberyn gave a shrug. A year or a fortnight, what does it matter? He poisoned his own nephew to gain the throne and then did nothing once he had it.
So it seems that Tyrion's is the scholar's opinion, while Oberyn's is the popular one. Viserys was permanently scandalized, whatever the truth may be.
Yeah. After all that, some of you may have a burning question in your mind. Wait a sec, guys. How could Baelor have been poisoned if he was fasting? How do you poison food that isn't being eaten? Well, technically, Baelor was eating a little bit of bread, apparently, and he was definitely drinking water. And, hey guys, we're aware, and you're aware, that there are poisons in the world of A Song of Ice and Fire that have no flavor. So, It's definitely possible.
Murdered or not, Baelor the Blessed was a controversial figure. Though Baelor could not have heirs, having taken Septon's vows, he was young, 27 when he died. He was younger than Aegon, don't forget.
Yeah, Aegon probably didn't like that Baelor had married his only legitimate son to the Dornish, whom, again, he hated. And that may have been done without his knowledge as well. When Baelor did his long walk through the desert to Sunspear, when he got to Sunspear, he negotiated the marriage of Moriah Martell to Aegon's son, Daeron. Aegon may have been off in Braavos or back at King's Landing. He certainly wasn't taking the walk with Baelor. So yet another thing for him to either have a, you know, another grievance for him against either his uncle or his cousin or his father. It all fits together pretty nicely. Now, on the other hand, it's no question that the future king, Daeron II, approved of his Dornish wife, Moriah Martell, and together they, at least, supported Baelor's peaceful policies towards Dorne. Openly, it was said that Baelor arranged the marriage, though possibly his more capable uncle, Hand the King Viserys, was responsible. And if that's the case, then, again, Another reason for Aegon to be mad at his father.
Regardless, Daron would continue Baelor's policies of bringing Dorne into the realm via peaceful means, and we can safely assume that Moriah, a princess of Sunspear, preferred the same to war. You can tell what side I'm on in the matter. Dorne all the way.
I, of course, am wearing a
Greyjoy
shirt, which really isn't relevant at all.
Not relevant,
and my
no.
Greyjoy mug. I'm just all Greyjoy.
It's relevant. You would not have liked it if Baelor had tried to convert you.
That's
guys.
True. I'm Drowned God forever.
But at this time, however, Daron and Moriah didn't really have a lot of clout themselves. They lacked lands and armies, you know, etc. They knew they might get their chance to continue Baelor's work someday, however.
Because, they hoped, and they had a good reason to think so, because even though Baelor was now dead, that means that our Aegon is now heir to the throne, meaning that Daron and his wife were only one step behind. Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Part 4. One Step from the Crown, the Reign of Viserys II.
Baelor starved himself to death fasting, said Tyrion. His uncle served him loyally his hand, as he had served the young dragon before him. Viserys might only have reigned a year, but he ruled for 15, while Daron warred and Baelor prayed.
That's right. That's why Viserys gets such a... It's so unfair for Viserys to get such a bad rap. He kept the realm together during the craziness of Daron's assault on Dorne and Baelor's just general craziness, but everyone just remembers him for supposedly poisoning the crazy Septon King. So Aegon bore witness to the ascent of his own father, Viserys, and for the previous three kings, and now King Viserys II. Consider all those things that Viserys had to work, cover for, and all those craziness he had to make up for. The lack of political skills with Daron the First really stands out.
And then he had to deal with the well-meaning but clearly reality challenged Baelor the First, who didn't understand basic human needs like, say, food, and who told the Citadel to replace all the messenger ravens with doves. He was pretty great for keeping the peace, but he also did completely nutso things like that.
And maybe not so great for keeping the peace if he was about to,
cause
a big religious war, but again, we don't know if that was actually true. Yeah. The old saying, the king eats, the hand takes the shit, indeed. Viserys was on the privy quite often and for a long time. Now, he had the chance to rule instead of, being the guy who had to sit on the toilet. It is said that he had the potential to be another Jaehaerys the Conciliator, which is an interesting thing to say about a guy that so many people remembered so badly. Ah, if only, though. In another year or so, Viserys II would be dead of what was called a sudden illness, so we will never know what kind of king he really would have been.
Much later, it was whispered that the son may have had something to do with the death of the father, and it seems not unlikely. Since Aegon was said to desire the crown as a boy, he seems to have had motive, and because his father forcefully ended so many of his affairs, perhaps he had sufficient resentment, too.
Yeah, again, recap some of the reasons that Aegon had to be upset. Again, Viserys sent away his mistress Mary Meg, married off Lady Felina, sent his daughters with Mary Meg to the Faith. There may have been admonitions. We got to figure that Aegon, being the kind of guy he was, and Viserys being this hardworking, kind of keep everything together, straight edge kind of guy, I got to think that he probably had some words for his son, being like, hey, straighten up and fly right, stop being such a, sleeping around, drinking, corrupt guy. I'm sure he had some words for him from time to time.
He was like, the whores are extinct.
So, basically, he may have even shamed him. Viserys may have done things to, embarrass him and to try, have tried different things, like Tywin Lannister's, he requires a sharp lesson. Viserys may have done some things like that for Aegon. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Now, it may have been Baelor, but Aegon's father probably had a lot to do with the marriage of Daron to Princess Moriah. So, again, this is a long list of things for Aegon to be upset about, plus several between the lines that we probably aren't aware of, because it's not like these characters' lives are fully detailed year to year. There's a lot in between the lines and a lot we just don't know, but we can make a lot of really educated guesses because we know so much about their personalities and things like that.
Yeah, Aegon pretty much definitely would have hated the fact that he had, if his father had something to do with marrying his son to the Dornish, he would have hated it. I mean, yeah. Aegon probably fought in the Young Dragons War, and he may have hated the Dornish for their violation of the peace banner and slaying of the outstanding Young Dragon. And though he showed very little regard for his brother Aemon in public, he may have also held a grudge against Dorne, or at least House Wyle, for leaving him in that cage over a pit of vipers. I mean, he wouldn't be the first brother to show contempt and protectiveness at the same time.
Yeah, he's my brother. Only I get to beat him up.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, plus, as crown prince, Aegon may have had more restrictions placed on him. It just would make sense. Of course they're going to put more restrictions on him. He's the heir to the throne.
Yeah.
He would have had more expectations from his father, and a man so easily controlled by his lusts would have a lot of motivation to get rid of anything that inhibited his ability to sate them. Anything between him and his lust, just get it out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. His father would probably, if not almost definitely, the main obstacle there. So the motivation for him murdering his father is there. We've shown a lot that he had motivation for murdering Baelor, and he certainly has motivation for murdering Viserys as well, and he certainly had the ambition for it. So, but there were even other things, again, for him to be upset about. Again, there was the issue with the Black Pearl, his relationship with the Black Pearl, which ended right around this time, around 170, 171. So holding to our pattern of when he loses a mistress, he turns his attention back to his his wife, his sister wife. Well, keeps going here. Nerys became pregnant at some point around this time. He had been sent away to keep him away from her. And he may have been thinking at this point, oh, I got her pregnant again. Uh-huh. Are they going to send me away again after she gives birth? Uh-huh. Better do something about that.
Uh-huh. But most of all, there is just his lust for the crown, which is mentioned straightforwardly in The World of Ice and Fire. The motive absolutely exists, 100%.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, since Viserys II had all the makings of a strong and capable king, and Aegon had all the makings of a man easy to manipulate, or at least a less restrictive and authoritative king, a third party could easily have motivation as well. Motive to get the strong king out of the way so as to manipulate the corruptible one.
Real world history is full of such examples. Song of Ice and Fire history also has some examples like that. It's a common thing for some people. Most people prefer to have the strong king ruling because that's great for everybody. But there's always those few really dangerous, ambitious people working behind the scenes who would rather blow up the world to benefit themselves. They don't care about the consequences. And
possibly a little like our Varys.
Yes, that's a very good comparison. So one can easily see why Viserys would be a target with Aegon waiting in the wings. If not from Aegon himself, there are a lot of other people that would say, man, if we had that crappy, you know, overeating, corrupt king, all you need to get what you want out of that guy is to give him a pretty woman. A lot of people would want to take advantage of that instead of this capable, effective, authoritative ruler who's a no-nonsense kind of guy. You could easily see why that guy would want to be taken out so that people could, you know, sink their claws into this puppet king of sorts. But on the other hand, Viserys was said to die of illness, and it could have just been that. It really could have happened. He was just over 50, so it's not like he was a young man. Yeah. Perhaps.
Yeah. That's what most of the characters in A Song of Ice and Fire think happened to Jon Arryn.
Mm-hmm.
We readers know better, but most in the story don't even question it.
Yeah, it's only like a few characters that know that he was poisoned. Almost everyone thinks, oh, he just died of a sudden illness.
Yeah.
The Viserys died of a sudden illness, too, of a stomach cramp. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
So, yeah.
So it's very possible. Now, with Viserys' death, we move on to part 5. The father of turmoil, the reign of Aegon IV himself. Quote, for the small folk, his reign might have been a source of gossip and amusement to the lords of the realm who did not stay at court and who did not wish to have Aegon make free with their daughters. He might have seemed strong and decisive, frivolous, but largely harmless. But to those who dared enter his circle, he was too mercurial, too greedy, and too cruel to be anything but dangerous.
And this perception would linger beyond his reign. If Westeros knew the awful truth of King Aegon IV, they might be a little less likely to side with the Black Dragon. One of the main arguments goes something like this quote. Daemon was the better man. The old king saw it too. He gave the sword to Daemon Blackfyre, the sword of Aegon the Conqueror, the blade that every Targaryen king had wielded since the conquest. And so the obvious counter-argument to that is, It's really hard to call Blackfyre's bestowal significant when Aegon's decision-making was so questionable. It's like saying, oh yeah? Well, the worst Targaryen king of all agrees with me, so there.
That's not a very good argument, is it? In any case, Aegon ascended the Iron Throne in 172, becoming King Aegon IV and donning the crown he had coveted for some time. Four kings died during his life, and it's responsible that he, or it's possible rather, that he was responsible for two of those deaths, perhaps two, one, or zero, anywhere between there. He wasted no time in earning his nickname, the Unworthy. I mean, he really put in a lot of that effort before he became king.
In the same year of his ascension, he continued his role as the true father of the Blackfyre Rebellions by adding two more players to the supporting cast. First, he added the true-born Daenerys, the same Daenerys who would marry the Prince of Dorne and one day allow children of all social classes to play together in her water gardens. Now, this is the same Daenerys who would supposedly win Daemon Blackfyre's heart and be named amongst the reasons for his rebellion. Also born very near the same time was Aegor Rivers, a.k.a. Bittersteel, who would be the Iron Throne's greatest enemy for most of his life.
No big deal.
And it's also interesting about these two is that they're really near opposites in their symbolism. One, Daenerys is so crucial in forming a bond of peace after war across many generations still to this day. Mm. And the other, crucial in creating war across many generations to this day.
Yep. It's pretty cool. It's one of those little details that I don't think is very well known, but when you really get into the material and really dig at it, like we've said many times, you're always rewarded for digging deep into A Song of Ice and Fire. There's so many good things to unearth. And many more of those things will be coming in the future episodes of this series on the Blackfyre Rebellions. We're very excited for that. Anyway, the mother of Aegor Rivers was another Maiden Vault girl named Barbara Bracken. All the girls in the Maiden Vault were set free when Baelor died. Keep that in mind. Aegon named her father, Lord Bracken, as his hand to the king. This would not be the only time Aegon named a hand as a result of his mistress. And there's a pattern you'll see developing. Hand, mistress, hand, mistress, hand, mistress. It's like the same family. It's like throughout his reign. And we're going to also see that people figured out that pattern themselves. Mm-hmm. This hand, like most hands in general, and many of Aegon's mistresses, proved to be very ambitious.
Yeah, meanwhile, during this time when he's, you know, with Barba, Daenerys' birth nearly killed Queen Nerys, as most of, you know, all of her pregnancies, really.
Yeah, another pattern.
And so while she lay dying, the ambitious hand, Lord Bracken, began to openly suggest that Barba become her replacement, the new queen of Westeros. What uppity.
Yeah, that's...
A Bracken queen.
A Bracken queen. Oh, well, there would be Blackwood queen, so...
I'm on the Blackwood side.
Okay, so that's okay then, right. This seemed to make the Brackens very unpopular. Oh, shocking, right? Oh. Talking while the queen is still alive, talking about making your daughter the new queen. Yeah. Really? That made you unpopular? Wow. Shocking. So it actually had the opposite effect intended.
Yeah, because Nerys recovered, and the Brackens grasping at the throne came back to haunt them.
Quote, "The king was never fond of Queen Nerys, but their brother the Dragon Knight and Prince Darren himself were outraged and forced Aegon's hand in the matter after the queen recovered."
So, Barba and Aegor were sent back to Stonehenge, away from court. And, adding insult to injury, Barba's replacement as Aegon's mistress was Melissa, a.k.a. Missy Blackwood. And we all know how Brackens feel about Blackwood.
Yeah, a lot more on that situation when we get to the Bittersteel-focused episode. I'm very excited about that one. The king's next mistress, however, was said to be his favorite. And as much as Barbara Bracken was rejected by the people at court, Melissa Blackwood was befriended. Even though she was a mistress, the three who pushed away Barba, Prince Daron, Prince Aemon, and Queen Nerys, were all said to actually love Missy, despite, you know...
I can't help but wonder if, like, at first it started as out of, like, a little bit of spite for Barba, and they were like, we really do like her, you know? Or if, like, that's why they were more amenable to her in the first place.
It could be. They may have just gotten used to the fact, like, well, he's going to have a mistress. This is the best we can hope for.
So, Missy had a daughter named Mia, and then another named Gwyneth. Two bastards named Mia we know of.
Mia Stone.
Yeah. Since Aegor was sent, I guess she was Waters. Since Aegor was sent away young, Aegon's children with Meg sent to be septas, and his children with the Black Pearl, apparently not even in Westeros, these daughters would be the first of Aegon's bastards to be raised at court.
Oh, she'd be Mira Rivers, of course. Brendan Rivers.
Oh, ha
So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway. Oh, yeah, you're right. She would be Mia Rivers. It's interesting, I guess. Yeah, it depends on... Yeah, interesting.
I guess it's just because she's her home is Blackwood, and, you know...
Maybe it depends on where they spent the spent a great deal of time.
Yeah, I guess
I don't know.
Arguably she could be a Waters, but
I think,
she
yeah,
was
I think
a Rivers.
Brendan, Rivers sounds good.
Yeah, but it does
Brendan
sound
Waters,
better.
Anyways, but technically, Damon Blackfyre was also raised at court, but his paternity was still concealed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these bastards at court... does beg the question of what Aemon and Nereus would have thought about them at court. But since Missy was so well-loved, this may not have been a problem.
Yeah, it was the first time, even though Aegon had all these bastards, these would have been the first ones that would have raised at court. So it's kind of breaking new ground. But like she said, Melissa being so popular and well-liked, it seems likely enough that her children would be given the same regard, despite who they are. Like, it's hard, in a vacuum you would think, oh, these are royal bastards, of course they're hated. Like, you think of Jon Snow and Catelyn, things like that. Even nice people like Catelyn have, you know, they have their personal feelings that they can't help. But so Missy must have been a really, really, you know, one of those people that just unite, you know, a real uniter, like a real real great person, I guess.
Just
a
friendly,
very
likeable,
charismatic,
yeah.
So great that we can see the personalities of these characters really coming out based on these details. It was around this time as well that Aegon entertained the idea of invading Dorne. It may have been personal. It's directly stated in The World of Ice and Fire that he hated Dorne. We've gone over that plenty of times in this episode. There are some less obvious signs for this, though. He was a reasonably smart guy, despite how awful he was. His wit is a good example of how we know he at least had some brain power. You don't see a lot of witty people who are dumb. That's just not, those things don't go together. So he, and of course people talked about how much potential he had. So clearly he had some. However, this attempt to invade Dorne was just blatantly destined to fail, which is why it kind of seems personal. It seems like no intelligent person could have possibly thought this would work, so maybe he was just worked up about it. I mean, a reasonably smart person, heck, Hodor, knows that you can't do what he tried to do, which was haul siege engines filled with wildfire through a deserty mountain pass into Dorne. That's exactly what he tried
in
to do.
In the extreme heat.
Yeah, and the extreme heat, like, crazy. Like, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, with the way the Dornish murdered his cousin, poisoned and tortured his brother, and poisoned another cousin, well, he had a few reasons.
Yeah, he had some reasons to be emotionally perturbed with the Dornish, but it was also really awkward. I mean, his son and heir was married to a Dornish princess, and here he is invading their homeland. And his grandson, who had been, you know, born by then, we said, and he may have had another by then, he ended up with a bunch of grandsons. Darren had four sons. The dates are a little unclear on when all they were born, but throughout the 170s, basically. So he had at least one, probably two by then, and maybe even three Dornish grandsons and a Dornish stepdaughter. So, but he's, we're going to invade them anyway.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, Daron argued against his father's plans to invade his own kin's homeland. Like, of course.
Yeah.
Surely he suggested peace and marriage like Baelor had, and like he himself based his policy towards Dorne on when he himself sat the Iron Throne. Aegon's response to his son's objections were to intrigue against his own son's legitimacy. He enlisted Ser Morgul Hastwick, which is quite an evil name.
Yeah, right.
Who openly charged Queen Nereus with infidelity at court. This way, Aegon himself was not involved in making the accusations, but he simultaneously began threatening to disown Daron in favor of one of his bastards. The Dragon Knight disputed the claims of infidelity, and he faced Ser Morgul in a trial by combat mentioned in Chapter 15 of A Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that early. Once again, these stories were part of the early narrative. It's really interesting how George clearly had all this thought out well before he wrote The World of Ice and Fire, at least most of the main details. So here's this quote. She gazed at Joffrey worshipfully. Must be Sansa, right? You know right away, based on that line. Just the first line.
Totally an Arya line.
He was so gallant, she thought. The way he had rescued her from Sir Ilyn and the Hound, why, it was almost like the songs. Like the time Serwyn of the Mirror Shield saved the Princess Daerysa from the Giants. Or Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight championing Queen Nereus' honor against evil Ser Morgul's slanders.
Mm-hmm. Aemon would again try to cast doubt on Daron's paternity. But he wouldn't do it again while Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight lived.
Yeah. Obviously, Ser Morgul lost that duel and was killed. And after that, considering Aemon was considered like the best fighter of his era, who would dare face him in another trial by combat? Even the king wouldn't be able to convince somebody to go there. So, regardless, though, the invasion of Dorne proceeded. And, as we said, didn't go very well. Aegon built a fleet and those crazy siege engines that spewed wildfire, thanks to the pyromancers. And all of those were destroyed without ever inflicting any harm on the Dornish. He lost several of his own men. Some soldiers died. Some, you know, non-Dornish died. But the Dornish themselves probably just sat home at home and laughing. So the awkwardness of him attacking his own family became just regular, awkward, humiliation type thing for Aegon. So it was a debacle of an invasion, and it cost many lives and made no progress. It at least served to end his ambitions for Dorne for good, which, as we said, he didn't seem like his ambitions, apart from the throne, seemed to be, you know, drinking, women, eating. So it didn't seem like he had much to do after that.
Yeah. So he went back to having affairs and making bastards. Stick to what you're good at.
Yeah. Yes.
So in 175, Missy gave birth to an albino boy with red eyes and a wine-stained birthmark called Brynden Rivers. And in time, he became known as Bloodraven.
You might call his future robust.
Not unimpactful.
Yeah. And in 176, there was an example of one of the most capricious and arbitrary things that Aegon did, which apparently he did things like this all the time, but this is one of the best examples we have. And this is the treatment of Lord Plum. Here's where we remember that a king does what he likes.
So, Aegon marries Lord Plum to one of the other Maidenvault girls, Elaena Targaryen, sister of the Young Dragon, and Daenha the Defiant. And now, Lord Ossifer Plum died on his wedding day. Supposedly, he died when he saw Elaena naked, but that may be a tale. Regardless, Aegon seized the Plum fortune rather than allowing it to pass to the new Lord Plum. He likely impregnated Elaena himself as well, and she claimed the child was Ossifer's so that she could rule the Plum lands through her new son. Brown Ben Plum himself is related to this branch. There's a big problem with that story.
What's that?
If he drops dead when he sees her naked, how is he impregnate her?
That's why. Yeah, that's where the whole that's, you guys may remember the story of the Brown Ben Plum tells a story of how his ancestor had a 6 foot long penis. Well, that's the reference. Remember, 6 feet under is what people say when you're dead. So in order to impregnate her, he would have to have a 6 foot long penis that could come up from the earth, etc. That's the joke. Jokes aren't better when you explain them, but that one's a little obscure. So, but Aegon didn't just take it the way. He also giveth, arbitrarily, of course, because that's the way he ran things. So he would also make extravagant gifts. Throughout his reign, there are some very key examples. Of course, giving Blackfyre to Daemon was the biggest example. But the prelude to that was the next most famous gift he gave away, which was to Lord Butterwell, who was possibly his hand at the time. We think Lord Butterwell was hand after Lord Bracken. It's not entirely clear. Regardless, at some point, Lord Butterwell was hand, and Aegon gave him a dragon's egg. As with all his hands, there was a woman involved. Three this time. All the daughters of Lord Butterwell.
Yeah, a king can do what he likes indeed.
Now, there's this consistent theme that we alluded to earlier, this theme of ambitious types out to gain power through Aegon the Unworthy's weaknesses and lack of interest in matters of state in general. In 177, Bethany Bracken, we're back to the Brackens, at last supplanted Melissa Blackwood as the king's mistress. So we went Bracken mistress, Blackwood mistress, and back to Bracken mistress. But it gets even more dramatic and soap opera-y, almost. This is Barba's younger sister. She had been trained for this. Basically, they, like, molded her to be Aegon's next mistress. That's kind of... And think about how weird that is. It's like, she knew what, like, Barba had been his mistress. She's, like, training her younger sister. Yeah, that's so weird. She probably taught her a few tricks or something.
Yeah. Having an older sister actively trying to teach you how to treat her former lover sounds really surreal.
Yeah.
So, Aegon brought Bethany back to court, and we don't exactly know what happened to Missy. There is a statue of her at Raventree Hall, so she didn't end in disgrace.
Yeah.
A scenario that makes a lot of sense is Missy's death, or at least that Aegon sent her away before finding Bethany at Stonehead. But Bracken may have simply turned the tables on Blackwood.
Bracken and Blackwood. However, by then, the old game of manipulating Aegon IV through mistresses had changed from Barba's day. They were thinking of the things Barbara was able to manipulate her and how she was willing to put up with whatever, I suppose. But that was 5 years ago. And in that 5 years, well, Aegon became rather gross. He was significantly overweight, and Bethany was having a hard time, you know, suffering his embraces and handling his disgustingness. She couldn't necessarily keep pretending that she actually liked it. That's the one thing they couldn't train her on, I suppose. But you, regardless, you don't want to do what she did. You don't want to make up for the king's ugliness by, you know, turning to handsomeness. And if you're going to, you really don't want to do it this way. She started an affair with one of the king's guard, a dashing, handsome man named Sir Terence Toyne.
And yeah, this one is especially evocative to me of King Henry VIII. I mean, obviously, Aegon IV is like a huge parallel. But this case in particular is like exactly like Catherine Howard. I mean, it's just like exactly, although we don't know the truth.
Yeah, the Catherine Howard thing may not have actually happened. Yes. This one almost
Yeah. So in 178, not only were they caught, but they were caught by the king himself. He, now, he isn't remembered for going easy on
Which, by the way, is perhaps the one piece of evidence that might mean that he made it all up. Like, he's the one who caught them. If it was somebody else, it might be more credible.
That's true.
I'm not sure what reason he would have had to cause this scandal.
He didn't want any handsome knights on his king guard. He's trying to get them all out.
It's a little weird that he would start a scandal on his own, like embarrassing himself like that.
I think it probably happened. But yes. So Bethany was executed. Her father was executed. And Barba and Aegor seem to have just been at Stonehenge, and they felt none of the king's wrath. But surely they felt the loss of these two family members, one of them her father.
Another thing for bitter shall be bitter about.
Yeah. While Sir Terence Toyne was tortured to death, and this had a domino effect.
Perhaps because of the torture, or just the execution in general, Sir Terence's brothers were bent on revenge. They were not happy about this. It was a blood debt for them. At some point later in Aegon's reign, probably sooner rather than later, though we don't know the dating on this, they took their shot at assassinating the king. We guess it happened within about a year of Sir Terence's treason. Kind of a ballpark guess there. We'd also guess that they couldn't find an opportunity to attempt the assassination without the Dragon Knight around. You'd think that that's the one guy you want to see. Well, when is Aemon going to not be there? Let's wait for when the Dragon Knight's not there. Let's go for it. That's the time to do it. But they didn't. They attacked while the Dragon Knight was around. Aemon managed to save Aegon the Unworthy, but he died doing so.
And that's a statement that really says it all about him. The Dragon Knight was a hero for the ages, and he fell as bravely as could be expected. Although he died as Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, saving the king, and as a brother saving a brother, this was not a man who deserved to be saved. Westeros would have been better with Prince Aemon still alive and King Aegon the Unworthy dead.
But no. It wouldn't be as dramatic of a story if that's how it happened. So as Aegon continued to get more obese and corrupt, his next mistress fit the theme of escalating depravity better than any other example.
So recall little baby Jane that we mentioned earlier in the episode. Well, she's grown up now. You've been patient.
14 years later.
Yes, young lady Jane Lawston was brought to court also in about 178, probably right after the Bethany Bracken scandal. Jane was only 14, as Aziz said, and she was said to be the daughter of Lord Lucas Lawston and Lady Felina, the king's first mistress when she was 14. But as we said earlier, she could have easily been Aegon's own daughter.
So gross. So not only did he take her as mistress, he supposedly had her and her mother at the same time. She got mother and daughter in the same bed, and he's probably father of the daughter with that mother. Like, you said, we said that this would be like the pinnacle of depravity. Well, there you go. I try to beat that. So as he was wont to do, he made his mistress's father his hand, again. The same man who was master at arms for Viserys, and possibly the man who trained him at arms when he was young. So he did have a connection to him, besides this back-and-forth mistress relationship that he had for several years, for over the course of so long. But soon enough, he gave Jane a pox, and sent her, Lady Felina, and Lord Lawston all back to Harrenhal, stripping him of his position as Hand of the King.
And in a pattern that just had to repeat itself one last time, John Hightower became the next hand, bringing with him the woman who had become the most beautiful of Aegon's mistresses, Serenay of Lys. I guess he decided not to throw his daughter under the bus.
Yeah, or maybe he just didn't have one. Yeah. He's like, I don't have a hot daughter. Let me go find somebody.
Send a letter to Lys. Send me the most beautiful woman you have.
Yeah. So, and of course, Princess Nerys, with the Dragon Knight now dead, didn't have her any companions anymore.
Yeah. And not only did Aegon do little to honor his sister and brother, who died for him, he began to revive the old rumors that Daeron was Prince Aemon's son, that Aemon and Nereus' closeness was not the normal brotherly-sisterly affection, but the Targaryen kind. Efforts to discredit Daeron's parentage were serious. Still, who would King Aegon name his heir? He had no other sons, and his daughter Daenerys was only 8 years old.
Well, by 180, it must have been apparent that young 10-year-old Squire Daemon was special. We'd guess he became a squire around this time, which is a little young, but he was still unacknowledged. He was still Daemon Waters at this point. Now, as the king's hard living started to catch up to him, his weight became such a problem that he was barely able to walk. We'll guess that Shiera Seastar was born sometime around 181, possibly as early as 179, maybe as late as 183 or 4, but 181 seems to fit the best. She'd be the final of the four great bastards. Sadly, though, Serenai did not survive the birth of Shiera. Now, in 182, Aegon, despite having gained enough weight that he had his own gravitational pull by then, he managed to attend a squire's tournament somehow. And it probably seemed like it would be a pretty normal day, just a squire's tournament, you know, let's just go out and watch the squire's jousting, you know.
Did Aegon have it planned? Did he despise Daeron enough that he was willing to start making real steps towards disowning him? We just don't know. Daemon, 12 at this time, won the tourney and got a far larger prize than anyone could have ever expected.
How about, first of all, being knighted, the youngest ever in the time of the Targaryens?
Sounds good. Let's throw in the news that you're the king's son. His eldest male bastard, in fact. Oh, not done?
No, not done. We'll not only name you the king's bastard and give you a knighthood, but we'll also give you Blackfyre, the ancient Targaryen sword of kings made of Valyrian steel, wielded by Aegon the Conqueror himself and his father before him, forged in the fires of the Freehold. Now, there was probably a time when Blackfyre was a little less important as a symbol, but without the dragons around, it was a major symbol. It became a major symbol, and it was going to become more important as the people who supported Daemon Blackfyre, you know, kind of pushed, kind of raised its status as a symbol.
Propaganda.
Propaganda. So this was a truly shocking gift. Yeah, the realm was like, wow.
Yeah, what was Aegon thinking? Was it a careless gesture, like the dragon's egg gifting? Or was he intentionally setting up major conflict?
It's very hard to say, but he did arrange for Daemon to be married, and to a powerful family at that, though not a Westerosi one. Daemon was betrothed to Rohan, daughter of the Archon of Tyrosh. The actual marriage came after Aegon's death, however. Mm-hmm. Now, Aegon's final 2 years were like a bit of a lame duck, or lame dragon, or fat, sick, and nearly dead dragon period. He slowly became this.
His body so swollen and obese that he could no longer lift himself from his couch, his limbs rotting and crawling with fleshworms. The maesters claimed they had never seen its like, while septons declared it a judgment of the gods. Aegon was given milk of the poppy to dull his pain, but elsewise little could be done for him.
Yeah, it sounds like that would be part of why he got so little done, not just because he was so sick, but he was constantly medicated with milk of the poppy, mostly just sleeping. But awful king as he was, even though he wasn't capable of much in the state, he still managed to do...
Yeah, his last act before his death, all accounts agree, was to set out his will. And in it, he left the bitterest poison the realm ever knew. He legitimized all of his natural children, from the most base-born to the great bastards, the sons and daughters born to him by women of noble birth. Scores of his natural children had never been acknowledged.
Scores.
Yes. Aegon's dying declaration meant naught to them. For his acknowledged bastards, however, it meant a great deal. And for the realm, it meant blood and fire for 5 generations.
It's like the biggest jerk move of all time, basically. He just had to stick it to Westeros, set up the wars that he avoided during his own lifetime. What could the Grand Maester have thought to himself when he heard this decree? All of them, Your Grace? Your son could be greatly endangered by this. Perhaps we should just send each of your bastards a ham. Just don't offer Bittersteel any horse meat. But why didn't he actually ever disown Daeron in favor of Daemon? Well, he didn't want to fight a war against his own son. The guy wasn't good at fighting wars. We saw that. Even he may have realized that. But he also would have known, because he's not an idiot, that his son would have been well supported. Most of Dorne would have supported Daeron, and a lot of the other houses would have simply supported Daeron because Aegon IV was so terrible. And so he just talked a lot. He didn't actually take these actions. But
possibly he was planning on more war eventually, but just died too soon. The marriage alliance with Tyrosh does have implications.
Quote, Aegon saw more profit in a tie to Tyrosh, perhaps because its fleet would be of use if he made another attempt to conquer Dorne.
But, or he might have been planning on setting aside Daeron, but knew he needed more support and for Daemon to be grown up. If he had lived another 5 years, he could have declared Daemon his heir, and that likely would have been enough to give Daemon the edge. I mean, he almost won the throne as it was, so we've got to think that a few more houses on Daemon's side would have been enough.
Yeah, it's a close call. Like, you can imagine, in several years, Aegon could have been thinking, oh, this promising young knight will be grown up, and the realm will have fallen in love with him. I can name him as my heir. Everyone will prefer that, but he had to wait, and in the meantime, he died. Mm-hmm. But if that was the case, why didn't Aegon's will also contain a provision disowning Daeron II? It did no such thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about this.
And as important as it was, Aegon's reign, great change did not occur during it. Great change did occur because of his reign, especially right there at the end. But at the actual time of his death, his now legitimized bastards were still young, so the damage wouldn't be felt for a while still. The ones who shook the realm had more growing up to do before they could do all that damage.
When Daeron became King Daeron II, he was 30 years old, and he had a 14-year-old heir in Baelor and a 12-year-old sister in Daenerys. He also had three sons, Aerys, Rhaegal, and Maekar, giving him a very stable line. Now he's the subject of our next episode. Daeron would do his best to undo the work of his unworthy father and complete the work of his uncle Baelor.
That's a lot of work. Surely there are tales to be told of Gwynnys and Mia, Brendan Rivers' elder sisters, or of Beleriand, the child of the Black Pearls that might have been Aegon's. He had sisters named Narha and Belnora, who took up the name of her mother to become the next Black Pearl. So, the line of Black Pearls continues even now, and Aegon's blood is still present in them, if the tales are true.
But we don't know those tales, or if those characters impacted the Blackfyre rebellions. What we do know is that Daemon Blackfyre, like Baelor, was also around 14 years of age, a few months younger than Baelor himself. Bittersteel, who probably didn't have that nickname yet, was around 12. Little 12-year-old Bittersteel.
Little baby Bittersteel, becoming a little teenager.
Bloodraven, ditto to that nickname, probably didn't have it, was 9 years old. And Shiera, likewise, was not yet the Star of the Sea, and she was only about 3 to 5 years old. They were no longer growing up as bastards, not legally, anyway.
We will continue this story with the next episode, as these bastards age up to... No longer bastards. Born bastards, legitimized bastards. As they age up to a point at which they become dangerous. What will the new king, Daeron II, do about all these legitimized great bastards? Tune in next time to find out. Mm-hmm. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. How about some end credits here? Thanks to everybody who's been supporting our Patreon campaign, which has only been around for a little more than a month. It's been a success so far. To learn more about Patreon, go to www.patreon.com/historyofwesteros, and you can read all the details there and see if being a supporter would fit you. It does help create episodes faster and at a greater pace. So we are very thankful to people who have enabled the production of History of Westeros to continue and to grow stronger, as a lot of you have been following. We're trying to make a full-time go of this, and the early Patreon support has really, really helped. However, we're going to need more support if we're going to keep this going long-term. So thank you to everyone who has joined so far. Another way to support the show is through Amazon. You can shop at Amazon.com using the links on our website. Anything you purchase, having clicked through those links at Amazon.com, will give us credit and will not cost you any additional money had you just gone straight to Amazon or any other way. So all your shopping needs can be done through Amazon that way, even though all the suggestions we have are pretty much all just Game of Thrones related stuff, which of course is just a fine thing to purchase as well. The new 2015 calendar, or, get the Dunkin' Egg books, or if you haven't got the World of Ice and Fire yet, what are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you can check out our website, www.historyofwesteros.com. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of good conversations going on the forums. This episode was discussed a bit ahead of time, and people took the opportunity to give us feedback and suggestions for what they'd like to see in the Blackfyre episodes. And since there's plenty more Blackfyre episodes to come, there's still plenty of time for you to join in the conversations on the forums and throw in your two cents and make some suggestions. You may even find your name mentioned on the show if you give us a really good idea. Thanks again to the people that helped with this episode, Rhaenys Targaryen again, as well as Jeff Hartline and Stephen Atwell, who you'll be seeing in episodes later in the series, and as well as Lord Varys from the forums and some other people whose names I forget. We'll get your mentions later, those who deserve it. And I think that's all we have for today. So until next time, everybody, Valar Morghulis.